going to call to order the Evansville Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Board meeting. First item is I'd like to introduce Rick Marquis from Federal Highway, and I think he has some folks with him he's going to introduce. Rick? Welcome. And also, Beth Jones is here, and she's going to put on a brilliant presentation here shortly, so, from Kentucky. We let her slip in every so often. First item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the previous meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. One other thing. We have a star in our midst from the Evansville Business Journal. Carrie's, they've got done a story on Carrie in here. And I think it just came out this week because I didn't remember seeing it, and then I remember it's laying on my table at home and I got it yesterday or something. So it was a very nice article, Carrie. Congratulations. Okay, old business. Laura, update.
Okay, we're going to start the update off with the City of Evansville's Washington Avenue, 2nd Street, Parrott Street area improvements. This is at the top of page 2. NDOT has granted the city authorization to proceed with the preliminary engineering contract. On to page 3 for Vandenberg County's Burkhart Road, Virginia Street intersection improvement. The project is currently scheduled for the November 13th bid letting. The construction engineering contract with CHA is being finalized. For the Maryland Street Bridge over Pigeon Creek, coordination with Vectren regarding the gas main is being finalized. Bidding is tentatively planned to begin again in mid-September with a possible contract award by the end of October. For the Heckle Road widening from Green River Road to Oak Hill Road, survey work is complete and preliminary plans are being developed. For the Green River Road improvements from Kansas Road to Boonville New Harmony Road, Stage 1 design plans have been submitted to NDOT for review. A preliminary field check is being planned for this month. And for the town of Newburgh, Newburgh's Safe Routes to School project, a pre-construction meeting was held September the 3rd. And for their sign replacement project, and the RFPs have been scored locally and sent to NDOT for further processing. Moving on to page 5 and NDOT's US Highway 41 Lloyd Expressway interchange project. All bids submitted during the August 20th letting were over the engineer's estimate and therefore all were rejected. The project has been re-scoped and re-advertised for the September 10th letting. Those are all the updates I have. Are there any questions about those or comments about others?
The Heckle Road, is that a county project?
That is a county project.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Laura.
Mm-hmm.
The star is up next. Carrie?
I am not coming back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're the star. Come on up, Beth. I'm sorry. I skipped right over you.
Oh, yeah, just getting better. I think I've met most or all of you before. I'm Beth Jones. I'm the MPO representative from Kentucky, from the KYTC. I put this presentation together for the last statewide meeting back in May, and Sayed in his infinite wisdom decided that maybe something could be gained by presenting it to you all too. Maybe I could pass along a little information that you're not aware of. So I am here to bring you all up to date. This is for the same reason that I actually got in touch with KYTC before. I'm probably one of the very few non-engineers working at the Cabinet. My background is in planning. And I was a, previous to coming to the Cabinet back in February, I was a planner with the Bluegrass Area Development District in Lexington for 6 years. And there were two main parts of that job that I really felt affect transportation quite a bit. One of those was that in the 6 years that I was there, we put together 5 comprehensive plans for communities in our area. And another was that we contracted with some of our local communities, the smaller communities, to serve as their staff planners. So I was also a planner for Anderson County, Kentucky, for that same period of time, for about 5 years. And it occurred to me after talking to some of the folks at District 7 that there were things that planners were doing in Kentucky that might be helpful to the transportation engineers and the transportation planners in prioritizing projects and in making decisions on specific options to choose from and that sort of thing. So that was why I ended up putting this together. And we'll see if I can... I think there is... I don't think people who are not planners necessarily realize what a huge connection there is between land use and zoning and transportation. And to be perfectly honest, I just graduated myself in 06, and I didn't realize even when I was in school, you know, how significant transportation is in how a community grows and how communities come together. I wanted to tell you a little bit about how, and this is all Kentucky stuff, so I'm not obviously not familiar with the other states, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about how it all happens in Kentucky. There is a state regulation that outlines how everything is put together, the procedures and the processes. As far as zoning goes, you can... planning commissions can be for a city area only, for an entire county including the city. There can even be 2 separate planning commissions, one for the city and one for the county. Or even, you don't see this happen, but there is authorization for groups of counties to get together if they feel like there's enough mutual interest to work together on it. Some of the things that are covered under these, under the zoning regulations are information about how planning commissions and board of adjustments are set up, subdivision management, which is just, of course, the creation of parcels. There are regulations about residential care facilities, about finding elements, about cell towers, of all things. But the two that have the most to do with transportation planning, or have the most potential effect, I think, are zoning itself, land use management, and comprehensive plans. The purpose of land use management, all that high language that is always used about health, safety, morals, and general welfare, it's basically to make sure that development occurs in an orderly fashion. And these are some of the things that, again, are included in the regulation itself. And you'll see that they specifically call out airports, highways, and other transportation facilities. So when this regulation was being put together, there was a recognition of how important transportation is as a part of all this. For those who aren't all that familiar with zoning, there are 2 main themes, I guess, or 2 main, I'm struggling for a word, but the one that has been most in use recently all across the country is Euclidean zoning. That's based on a Supreme Court decision from Euclid, Ohio. And Euclidean zoning is a traditional one that's been used for a long time, and it's basically based on the land, the use of the land. There's not really any other considerations taken into consideration on that. But just recently, over the past, I would say, 10, 15 years, there is more of an emphasis on what's called form-based zoning and or mixed-use zoning. It's sort of a new concept, but yet it reminds me very much of the way neighborhoods and communities used to grow up organically in the days before zoning happened. It allows for much more flexibility in the land uses. There can be mixtures of residential and commercial. This is where you can see things like the old-fashioned concept of having shops on the ground floor and apartments or residences above. There tends to be even a more direct mix of different types of residential uses, you know, from apartments all the way to bigger houses and single family. It tends to be more multimodal and less auto-dependent. You have businesses in a neighborhood that allow people to not have to get into their car to do everything that they do in their life. They can potentially get, you know, walk up the street to the convenience store or to the dry cleaner or something like that. And in my opinion, I think it creates much more of a neighborhood feeling rather than a subdivision feeling. And that is something that you that you're starting to see more in Kentucky and around the nation. The regulations are, use is still an issue, but there's also a lot of emphasis on the physical forms that the buildings themselves take and how well they work with each other. So that's where the form-based concept comes in. There will be, as everyone who has zoning is generally going to have a zoning map, and that's going to show actual uses and or zones. Sometimes a zone that you see in a zoning map is not going to coordinate with the actual use that you see from your windshield, simply because a lot of times things have been grandfathered in from before a zoning regulation was established. And these maps may also show areas that are restricted in some way for development because of, you know, recreational areas or wildlife conservation, floodplains, that sort of thing. So this can be a good source of information about, you know, how a community is developing and, you know, where different types of development are happening. There is a process that's fairly rigid for making zone changes, and it is outlined again in this regulation. A planning commission, a legislative body, or the owner of the property can initiate a zone change. 99% of the time it's going to be the owner of the property. There are requirements regarding public hearings. All the neighbors are notified. Everybody's given the best chance that they can to try to be able to make comments and offer their opinions and their ideas. There's a fairly rigid process for making your decisions too. The applicant must show that the change that they're requesting is in compliance with the comprehensive plan that the community has in place, or that the existing zoning classification is inappropriate for some reason. Maybe it was just flat out a mistake, you know, and that what they're wanting to do is more appropriate, or that there have been major changes in the community since the last comprehensive plan was adopted, so, you know, it was sort of an unanticipated change. After the hearing and the public hearing and the presentation to the Planning Commission, then the planning staff will develop a recommendation and pass it along to the legislative bodies, whoever is appropriate, and they actually have the final decision. They can either choose to accept or reject the recommendation of the Planning Commission. But I'm going into this detail to emphasize the fact that there is a procedure that has to be followed. The public is invited to make comment. The legislature weighs in. The legislative bodies weigh in. So it's not just a decision that's made. So when you see something on a zoning map, as a transportation person, you can have a little bit of reliability that there were people in the community involved in this decision, and that it is a community decision and not just something that somebody decided and put down on paper. So again, when you're considering projects and when you're trying to write funding justifications and that sort of thing, there may be bits and pieces in these zoning documents that you can use as part of your case for or against a particular project or a particular place for it. Now, the other one, in addition to the zoning, is the comprehensive plans. Any community that wants to have zoning is required to have a comprehensive plan. You cannot have zoning without a plan. It's a 20-year window that's supposed to be updated every 5 years. They can go through and do a complete update, a partial update. They can vote to readopt as is, you know, whatever the community feels is most appropriate. The committee that develops this is usually going to have local folks, private sector stakeholders, in addition to, you know, folks that are involved with public agencies, that sort of thing. There are public input opportunities. Elected officials are required to approve parts of it. Adjoining jurisdictions have to be notified. So that, again, the point is that there is more to it than just putting together a document. And again, if something is in a comprehensive plan, you can have a little bit of confidence that, you know, that this is something that the community has put together. And there are similar documents that because Kentucky has MPOs with shared MPOs with four other states, with all the surrounding states, I checked into it, and all of them have some, they may not call it a comprehensive plan, but they have a similar kind of document. So you'll be able to find those in, you know, any MPO area. There are some required elements. There's a statement of goals and objectives. There's a base study. There's a community facilities element. There's a military installation development, element, and again, you can see that there's specifically called out in the regulation that there has to be a transportation element to it. And communities, in order to sort of customize it to their own needs, can bring in other elements that are particularly important to them. If you're a historic community and you want to discuss that in detail, you can bring that in too. It's not required, but it's definitely permitted. The statement of goals and objectives is put together by the committee. Again, stakeholders, professionals, government agency folks. It is required to be presented for public comment. And this is the part of the plan that is required to be approved and adopted by the elected officials. So again, you have community input, you have elected official input, and you have, you know, some kind of, hopefully some expertise and knowledge from the community on that committee. Can't really even see these actually, but this particular one is one we did for Jessamine County in 2011, I believe it was. But they had a planning commission in the city of Nicholasville and one for Jessamine County. They have not joined the planning, they have not consolidated the planning commissions, but they decided for the first time to come together and do a joint plan, which we thought was a really great idea. So they're all on the same page as far as how things want to go in the future, even though they still have two separate planning commissions. But you can see there's a lot. We had 8 pages worth, and again, there is a transportation section that talks about what needs to go on in transportation in the community. This is always, I like this much more than I ever expected I would, the base study where you go in and talk about demographics and education levels and all that kind of thing. And the point is to try to get a fact-based knowledge base rather than on, you know, anecdotal basis and what you think about what's happening, trying to get some real facts about the community that will help you make decisions about what the future needs to be and where things need to happen. Then there's a community facilities element, and this is sort of an existing conditions thing. You go in and talk about schools, libraries, public safety, water and sewer, parks and recreation, anything that is important to the community as far as community-wide facilities. I can't remember exactly how close the military installation needs to be, but if it is part of the area that you're planning for and it is at least 300 acres, then you have to bring those folks into the process too. so that you know what's going on with their plans. And then, again, the final required element is the transportation element, and that's meant to talk about all kinds of transportation, roadways, any airports, any waterways. And again, the fact that they specifically called this out in the regulation to me says that there's an acknowledgement of how important they, you know, there's a realization of how important it is. And here you'll just see some of the things that we did in the Jessamine County plan. Lots of maps, discussion about what's in the Kentucky six-year plan, what's on the unscheduled needs list, what the community wants to see happen, and a lot of maps and tables and really trying to get into what the community wants to do and what's, I don't know what's going on there, but a lot of maps. And then again, like I said, you have the optional elements that the community wants to put in. One thing that we always tried to include was information about soil characteristics and geology and that sort of thing, because that can tell you about where it's going to be most cost efficient to put in the two main drivers, which to me are sewer lines and roads. So that can supply you with some information that will help you with those decisions too. And then it all wraps up with a land use element where they really get into the nitty-gritty of where we want things to go. Talk about, you know, historic districts, downtown development districts, any kind of things like that the community wants to have. And there will be another map that is generally with the comprehensive plan. And this is different from the zoning map, because this one usually will show actual existing and existing uses, but there's the added aspect of future uses. So you can see from looking at this map at a glance where the community sees its industrial development happening, where it sees its residential development happening, where it sees its business development happening. So you can, and they have reasons that they made those decisions, so you can use that as part of your decision-making process. And again, because the community is involved and elected officials are involved and all of that sort of thing, again, it's something that has some weight to it. So, key points. Comp plans do require fact-based research. The planning process does require input from the people who live there, from the business owners, from the government agencies, and from elected officials. And it is a reflection of the wishes of a community. So again, that can be something that can be really valuable to transportation planners in making those kinds of decisions. And that anything that is happening, any kind of development that is happening, has to be in agreement with that comp plan. So it's a pretty good authority to be able to look at. So, make local planners a partner. I tried to make that last line go bold, and it wouldn't do it. So, but you can talk to, I don't think there's a lot of interaction with planners on a local level when projects are being developed. And there's a lot of good resources there and a lot of good information that can potentially be mined and looked into if you take the time to do it and if you know that it's there. So I closed up with some plans that I personally worked on. They're posted on the web on the Bluegrass Dad website. If anybody's interested in actually taking a little bit closer look at one of these or whatever, these folks know how to get a hold of me. Just shoot me an email and I'll send you links to the plans, because you really can't get into a lot of detail on it in a presentation like this. But I think it's potentially a valuable source of information that folks don't necessarily know about. And that's it.
Thank you.
No fireworks.
Any questions?
Very good.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make everybody aware of those things, and hopefully you can kind of put it in your toolbox and keep it in mind for future planning projects that comes up. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. A star is born. Okay, Carrie.
The
annual Unified Planning Work Program Performance and Expenditures Completion Report for fiscal year 2014 presents a summary of the activities and products completed by the NPO during fiscal year 2014. Described in the report is the progress attained in completing each of the work elements, and these were all contained in our UPWP that comes out in the spring. Each work element in this document includes a description of the status, related products, and funds expended. The document also includes budget and expenditure summary tables for each funding source, the fiscal year 2014 fourth quarter project update, a listing of the 779 traffic counts that we took, and a table listing the TIP amendments and TIP modifications processed during the year. And attached to your packet is page 37. It's a snapshot of all of our projects as well as our budget. So at the very bottom, it says we had $2 million budgeted and we've expended $1 million and that we still have a balance of $1 million. All of this money has to do with our special projects, our SPP projects that are still going on. These are multi-year projects. It's the 502.4, which is the MES Comprehensive Operational Analysis, our 509.7, which is the Evansville Bike and Pedestrian Master Plan, and the 509.8, which is the Regional Pavement Management System. And 90% of those funds are paid to the consultant, so we're never sure how much, how soon they're going to get our invoices to us to be able to pay them before the cutoff of the fiscal year. And then the other one is the 505.4, which is the public education air quality program that WNIN is producing for us. And that total balance all gets paid to our producer, and I believe they have about five episodes left. An electronic copy has been sent to our federal and state planning partners, and they are currently reviewing them. We have some hard copies in our office if anyone would like a hard copy, and the electronic copy is also available on our website. And if you have any questions, please feel free to contact us.
Questions? Comments? Thank you, Carrie. Rob, it looks like you're next.
The Evansville MPO requests approval for the Evansville Metropolitan Planning Organization Title VI program. The Title VI states that no person shall, on the grounds of race, color, sex, or national origin, be excluded from the participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be otherwise subjected to discrimination under any program or activity for which the MPO receives federal financial assistance. This Title VI program is adopted and followed to ensure that the MPO's programs, policies, and activities comply with the Title VI regulations. This draft program was sent out by email last week to the policy and tech committees and has been on our website the past week for review and comment. We request your approval of the Title VI program.
So
moved. Sorry.
Second.
No, it's all right. I need a second.
Second.
All those in favor, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed,
aye.
Same sign. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Pam.
In May, we did a call for projects for our Transportation Alternatives Program projects. We sent the notice out to our local planning, our local public agencies, as well as our planning partners. We received two completed applications, one for the Indiana portion of our funding opportunity and one for Kentucky. The one for Indiana we received from the City of Evansville. It was for Pigeon Creek Greenway Passage, the installation of drinking fountains along the Greenway at three locations, the riverfront area near Four Freedoms Monument, Shirley James Gateway Plaza, and then at the Yulehorn Trailhead. That project, the request was for approximately $31,000. That is just to purchase the supplies that are needed to install the drinking fountains. They're going to install the drinking fountains with local forces. They are not asking for federal funding for the installation portion of it, just to purchase the supplies that they need to put the drinking fountains in. That project scored 39 out of 75 points. The second project was for the Kentucky Transportation Alternatives Program funding. The City of Henderson applied for Phase 2 of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. This is for additional roadway signage and pavement markings, and they're asking for approximately $36,000. That project scored 64 out of 75 points.
Do we have any idea how many miles they're going to cover with that?
It was a part of their application. I don't have that with me. I apologize for that.
Any questions? Comments? We need an approval. And entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Pam. Craig, it looks like you get quite a bit of the rest of it.
All right, we have several TIP amendments that we're going to go through first here. The first one was requested by the City of Evansville, and let me move on past Pam's items there. Weinbach Avenue Road Diet Project, corridor conversion to three lanes, including sidewalk improvements from Pollock to Walnut Street. They are revising the PE schedule to reflect funding over fiscal 15 and 16, as well as adding illustrative construction cost. You see there $1,674,000. Construction will be funded 90% with federal HSIP Safety Improvement Program funding and a 10% local match. The HSIP application, that call was distributed in April of this year. The Weinbach Road project was the only project submitted that did score along the prioritization process, 51 of 75 possible points, and this project was approved by the state HSIP committee for those funds.
Okay, before you move on,
yes.
Is this also replacing the widening at Lincoln and Weinbach? Is that all in this project? Or have we scrapped the widening project?
Lincoln and... yes, this project, project was kind of re-scoped and led to this project, I guess would be the best way to look at it. We're looking at a different contract through the corridor, correct.
Okay.
Because that project was there for a while, and we're pursuing this path instead. Moving from that one, the next one was KYTC, the US 60 project to widen and improve US 60 from west of the community college there to KY 425. Add right-of-ways and utilities for $1 million both in fiscal 15 and construction $5.5 million in fiscal 16. Those projects are all going to be 100% funded with SGP program funding and a Kentucky toll credit match. Then we have two requests for the UPWP, both of which are to add fiscal 15 planning elements, one for safety at $100,000, data collection analysis and GIS mapping of crash data, and a second for CMAC administration program development and HPMS data collection, $34,192, 90% on the HSIP funding and 80% federal funds on the CMAC STP funded side.
Any questions?
One question.
Sure.
Did the technical committee approve all these?
They did. They requested this for approval this morning.
Very good.
Any other questions? Entertain a motion for approval of items 1, 2, 3, 4.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Next group.
Sure. The next group is administrative modifications, and these are for your information. They're minor changes to projects already contained in the TIP, so you don't need an approval for these. Mostly, we're going to revise some scheduling and some minor adjustments to project costs for KYTC projects here with this list. The first, US 41 and Wolf Hills Road intersection project, right away revised from fiscal 13 to 15, utilities from 13 to 15, and construction from 15 to 16. Funding sources and estimates remain the same. US 60, reconstruction from Corden Bypass to Henderson Bypass, right away revised from 13 to 15 with a cost update. You see there utilities from 13 to 15 as well with a cost update. illustrative construction, revised a cost to update from $18.7 million to $24.2 million, and this project remains state-funded. US 60 bypass of corridor, right-of-way revised from fiscal 13 to 15, utilities revised also from 13 to 15, costs and project funding sources remain the same. US 60 bridge replacement over Green River, construction revised from fiscal 15 to 16, essentially splitting out the project as well as an illustrative year there, so essentially 16 and 17 construction most likely. No change to funding source. Kentucky 2183, Kentucky 1549, intersection improvement for safety, right away from 13 to 15, utilities from 13 to 15, and construction from 14 to 16. Cost estimates and funding, no change. Kentucky 351, horizontal and vertical realignment, shoulder widening and guardrail installation, revised PE from fiscal 13, as well as adjust the federal funding source there. From SHN to hazard elimination safety, revised fiscal 13 utility funding source from federal STP and hazard elimination safety to AGS only, construction from 14 to 15, and again revised that funding as you see described there. Transit section 5310 program administration, we're revising the budget for fiscal year 15 from $22,623 to $21,768.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Greg.
Other business. Laura, rezoning.
Let's see if I can get rid of this and get some pictures up here. Okay. Okay, our first rezoning is on Fulton Avenue between Illinois and Indiana Street. The rezoning is from M2 and R4 zones to an M1 zone. This is basically just north of the interchange at Fulton and the Lloyd Expressway. The property is currently mixed use of residence and commercial. The proposed use is offices and warehousing, so nothing specific yet. Our recommendation was access should be restricted to Indiana Street and Illinois Street as these roadways carry less traffic and are classified for direct access purposes. As a minor arterial, any access to Fulton Avenue would need to meet the clearance distance set out in the MTO's access management manual.
There's just a warehouse there now and an old grocery store.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a warehouse. Maybe a kind of a corner, maybe an old grocery, and several residences.
But the residents aren't involved, right?
Some of the residences are on, I believe it's Indiana, on Illinois Street on the north side.
Oh, yeah, I see those.
Yeah.
Because there's one there off of Indiana that's supposedly historic.
Right.
Okay. Next.
Okay, the next rezoning is 5600 Diamond Avenue. This is basically at the intersection of State Road 66 and State Road 65, the northwest corner in Vandenberg County, Big Cynthiana and Diamond Avenue. The rezoning is from agricultural zone and R1 zones to an industrial M1 zone with a use and development commitment. They stated the listed proposed use was industrial or commercial development, so that again is not specific. And our recommendation is any access to MDOT right-of-way will require MDOT approval and may require a traffic impact study and accessory improvements that result from that study.
Do we know what the use and development commitment is?
I do not.
Well, there's one on it, but they're going to withdraw this.
Oh, it's good to hold
that. Last I heard, this is going to be withdrawn.
Oh, is it?
But there was its use and development on it.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Next.
Oh, we didn't even have that one. Okay.
This last one is a subdivision. This is Schnooks North in Vandenberg County. This is a 9-lot, 16-acre commercial subdivision located at the northeast corner of Highway 41 and Boom Boom and Harmony Road. The property is currently zoned commercial and partially developed as Grant Hills Subdivision, which was a 5-lot, 11-acre partial or a subdivision. The existing public roads, Riley Drive and Dixie Lane, are to be vacated and replaced with a private internal frontage road. A request has been submitted to NDOT for a proposed 3/4 access, which would not allow left turns from the property to southbound 41, but would allow like right in, right out, and southbound left onto the property. Through the acquisition of the zoning, acquisition and zoning of the property to the north. If you remember last month, we brought a property on Highway 41 before you. It was just to the north of this property that was being rezoned, and that they're asking for an access through that property to Highway 41.
Not through this existing one.
Yeah. Well, it's just to the north, so they would, that those properties would be then combined.
And then they're asking, going to ask for one on the Old State Road out of this one too?
Yes. Our recommendation is that any access to U.S. Highway 41 requires NDOT approval. Access should be restricted to the existing improved location on Boonville New Harmony Road at Riley Drive and one additional access onto Old State Road. The traffic impact study submitted in September 2001 for a portion of this property should be updated to include the proposed subdivision layout and all proposed points of access to determine if additional improvements are required within county right-of-way, such as extending the concrete median along Boonville and Harmony Road to the intersection at Riley Drive, and to verify that the level of service at these intersections do not fall below acceptable levels.
Do we know where they're going to ask for one on Old State? Are they just going to ask for one?
There is a certain distance.
From the intersection?
Yes. There is a property at the corner there that is zoned commercial but not part of this development.
And I assume we're going to try to line up this entrance with the one across the street from it.
There, it's already there. The one on Boonville New Harmony Road is already there, and it lines up.
Because it goes to the bank.
Right.
Yeah. I would think the traffic study is going to be interesting when they do this new one here. But any other questions? Thank you. Laura? Well, I don't see it on here. I would entertain a motion for approval of bills.
So moved.
There, second.
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Oh, there it is, approval of bills. Can't read. It's been a long day. Any public comment? Seeing none. Panels.
Just wanted to provide the committee an update on the regional pavement management system. We had a kickoff meeting yesterday with the consulting firm. They plan on starting to drive the network the end of this month, beginning of October. So I will be reaching out to all of the local agencies because I'll be needing some information from you as to who we need to notify that this van will be driving your roads, because we anticipate that you may be getting some phone calls from people wanting to know what's happening and who they are, what they're doing. So we're going to reach out to you. We're looking for contact information for maybe the law enforcement agencies, your local dispatch, any local elected officials we may need to get this information in front of. If you have any neighborhood association groups that you would like for us to send a notice to so that they can talk to their neighborhood association folks, but anybody that you have in mind that you would like for us to get this notice in front of, we'll be contacting you, so start thinking about that so that you can get that information to us, okay?
And what's the time frame?
I will be contacting you sometime next week.
Good.
Is the van marked so that...
We plan on having them, you know, we actually plan on having them put, they can print up a magnet that they put on the side, and we're having, we haven't talked about it internally as to exactly what we're going to have on there, but we'll probably have Metropolitan Planning Organization, our phone number on there so that if they see it, they can call our office. We've also considered giving the driver of the van a letter or two that has a notice on it as to what they're doing. So if somebody happens to stop the van, they'll be able to hand the letter out as well. But we also like to do some kind of a media announcement as well where they'll bring the van and we can have, you know, whomever you want maybe to be there to talk to the TV station, maybe talk to the newspaper so that we can kind of publicize it that way as well.
They're taking pictures?
Take pictures, yes.
Oh, I mean, are they taking
pictures? They will. Oh, absolutely. They have three cameras positioned.
That will be our question.
Exactly.
Any other questions? Thanks, Pam. Seeing nothing else and no other public comment, we're adjourned. Well, let's switch on the working.